Today's daf in Masechet Ketuvot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Pei Aleph. And we're holding right at the Gemara after the Mishnah that we learned yesterday, in which we found that there's a lot of questions about what the din is of a Shomeret Yavam in terms of the status of her husband. Is the Yavam really a husband? Is he not? Which makes completely different dinim and sveikas legabi who gets to inherit her. And the suffix today that Gemara wants to raise is who would actually be responsible for her burial in the event that she dies before any of this happens, because she's only a shomeres yavam and he hasn't taken her yet, and she goes and ups and dies before anything happened. So we said that there were really two different sets of Yorshim. Beisel says that it depends. Certain things are the Yorshim of the family that she came from, which we call the father's house, and the other things are in the rishus of her husband. So which one of them is going to be responsible for the burial? Do we say that the Yorshei HaBa'al Kavrila, Dika Yarte Ktuvata? Remember, we said for sure that the ksuva itself is actually for sure going to be in the rishus of the Baal, and that they and the heirs of the Baal certainly are not going to pay her the ksuva. And not only that, but remember, according to Beis Hillel, it could be that that includes the Tzom Barzel as well, but that goes to the husband. We mentioned that that's a big machlokas, what to do with Tzom Barzel, but in any event, where we've got that kind of money, so maybe they should be the ones that actually do bury her. Or do we say that the Yorshei Av are the ones that are responsible for the kfura? The kayarte nechasim anichvasim vayotz imima. The nichse melug. Now remember, it's possible that they even inherit, because that was part of the machlokas, they even inherit Tzom Barzel. But if we say it this way, then it's true according to everybody. We don't have to get into the big problem. So remember, we had before that the kfura is, when we went through all the lists, that there's a juxtaposition of what she's getting versus what the Baal is taking. So we spoke about things like her salary versus the support, or the peros, which is juxtaposed with the insurance policy for kidnapping. And one of the things that we said over there was that kfura is a juxtaposed with the fact that she's going to get a ksuva. So in other words, since he, if she dies, he gets to keep the money that he had promised to give her in the event of the dissolution of the marriage from his point. That is, if he would have died, or if he would have divorced her, since over here she does him the favor of dying and therefore he gets to keep the ksuva. So then in exchange for that, he agrees to the kfura. And if that's the case, then we would apply the normal halacha over here, and we would say, okay, whoever gets that, which in this case is the family of the Baal, so then they are indeed responsible. But on the other hand, we could say, look, I mean, that's because normally when we're talking about that, that's because he really is a husband. And because of that, he's going to also inherit her. I mean, he's inheriting everything. Her Tzom Barzel, or Nechse Melug, and so on. So even though it says the word that it's for her ksuva, remember, the word ksuva can also be used to include everything that's written up in that ksuva. So in the case of a Yavam, who doesn't have that advantage, so maybe Eino Chinami, the Yavam shouldn't have to pay. Omar Rav Amram, Toshma, I think we can see it very clearly from the Braisa. Tanya, Shomeret Yavam Shemeta. If she dies, then Yorsheha. Now, that's very strange language. Yorsheha, Yorshei Ktuvata, Chayavim, Bikfurata. So the ones who are going, there are maybe other Yorshim, but which Yorshim? The Yorshim that are Yorshei Ktuvata, they, and specifically they, are Chayavim in the burial. And it says, Abaya, look, you could see it, even the language in the Mishnah. Take a look at this Mishnah that we're going to have later on. Almanani zonet minichsei yatomim. Now, okay, now we know all of this stuff. An almana is going to be supported from the estate. And nonetheless, the dinim that were there when the husband was alive, since it was an exchange for the mizonos, if she's working, then the maaseh yadeha go to the inheritors of her husband, his children. The ein chayavim bekvurata, nonetheless, they are not the ones that have to bury her. Yorsheha, yorshei ktuvata, or chayavim bekvurata. Her heirs, specifically, which heirs? The ones that inherit the ksuvah, they're the ones that have to pay for the burial. Now, what is that supposed to mean? Yorsheha, yorshei. Obviously, we're talking about a woman who has two sets of yorshei. What kind of woman would have two sets of yorship? Now, obviously, the Mishnah is not talking about a shomeret yavam because there are heirs. And if there's heirs, there's no yibam. We're learning out from the words of Yorsheha, Yorshei Ktuvata, that this Mishnah is setting aside a specific ruling for a case where there would be a woman who has two sets of yorshim, meaning that there were no heirs to the husband, and therefore she's a shomeret yavam. So a zoi amanash yesh la shnei yorshim havi omer zo shomeret yavam. And it says specifically that the ones that are keeping the ketuvah, who's the ones that are keeping the ketuvah? The yavam's family is keeping the ketuvah. Because remember, we said that since that money was never paid, it was always there with the husband's estate, they are responsible for the kfura. Okay. Omar Rava.
Should we break here?
Break for what? Omar Rava.
New doubt.
Velema ach anioresh, ishto inanikover. Why can't the Yavam say, I don't understand what's going on over here. I wasn't yoresh my wife. I wasn't yoresh his wife. I wasn't yoresh from anybody except my brother. That's all that I have. So why in the, I don't know what you're saying. You're saying, I inherited the ksuva? I didn't inherit anything from her. I mean, if the brother had survived, he would have inherited from her. But what happened is that the ksuva was never paid. That's all. So the estate that I'm inheriting included money that he, I care what he might have had to pay if life had worked out differently. The bottom line is, I am not taking anything from her at all. Now, Rashi learns because of this, that when we're talking about the ksuva, we literally mean the ksuva, that is to say the 200, the 400, the tosefet, and we're not talking about the tzon barzel, because if we're going according to the shita, that the tzon barzel is kept by the yavam, so how can he say he's not inheriting anything? Okay, this is Rashi's approach. Those who learn that it is talking about the tzon barzel have to explain the question of, I'm only inheriting his wife, him and not his wife, differently. But we'll take it simply. I didn't get anything through her. Everything I got was directly from my brother. How did it suddenly become my chiyuv to bury her? Omale Abaya, no, it still makes sense, because you can approach the yavam and you can come at him from both angles. You could say, look, make up your mind, okay? If basically you are considering yourself as the brother, and that's what this is, you become now the one who stands in the place of his brother, so then fine, if you're coming from that point of view, so then you have to bury his wife, because you're saying that you have all of his chiyuvim, so then you should be have the chiyuv of burying her. If you're claiming that, well, but I'm not really in my brother's place, so then if you're not going to bury his wife, so then why in the world would you not pay her her ksuva? Because we had made the two as being interrelated. Amale, says Rava to Abaye, what I meant was that, ach ani yoresh, et ishto ein ani kover. And if somebody claims, so that if that's the case, I should have to pay the ksuva, I meant to include the obvious logic against what you're saying is, what you're saying makes no sense. Lo nitna ktuva likvot bechayim. What are you talking about? If the husband was alive, Is there a ksuva? You can't, she can't collect the ksuva while he's alive. So basically, her husband died. I'm taking the place of the husband. And if she died now, it's as if she died in her husband's life. So where would I get the chiyuv of paying her ksuva? I never took the personal responsibility of burying her. The ksuva never went into her rishus. I never got the ksuva through her. What kind of logic is that, claiming that, well, if you're not going to bury her, then you have to give her the ksuva? I don't understand. If you would tell me that the ksuva was collectible in his lifetime, and that basically I'm taking something that was really hers, you'd make sense. But that is definitely not the case. That's what I was saying. So what are you trying to say to me, Abaye? Says Abaye, I got news for you. Man shamat le isle midrash ksuva. Who is, when you say that the ksuva is not collectible, okay? How do you know the ksuva is not collectible? Because of what we had before. Look at the language, as Beit Shammai says. Look at the language of the ksuva. Remember the machlokas about whether if she goes in and she claims that her husband died, whether she collects her ksuva, and it said, we're going to believe her that she can marry somebody else. And Beit Shammai said, well, my friends, if you believe her that she can marry somebody else, then ipso facto she collects her ksuva, because that's what it says in the ksuva. You will get this ksuva when you marry someone else. Okay, so she married someone else. So that means that the language of the ketuba itself commits the husband to paying the ketuba in the event that you go ahead and you're married to someone else. Now, that's Beit Shammai Shita. The problem that you have, Rava, is that Beit Shammai Shita is also the shtar ha'omed likvot kigavui dami, as I'm going to prove to you in a minute. So if you own a shtar, that shtar is considered to be the equivalent of money. And if you have a question right now in which two people, you've got somebody who's holding a piece of property and you are holding a shtar against that property, you are the one that is considered to be mulzak in that property, because it's as if it was already gavoy. And therefore, since the woman is holding all of these liens against his property, it's as if it's already hers. And then if she dies, it means that the yavam who gets that money got it through her, not through his husband, and because she was the one who was considered to be more mukhsik. And that's why I'm tining, says Abaye, that you got to make up your mind. Either you're going to bury her and then you get it, or you're not going to bury her, but then you don't get it. But you can't have it both ways. And I'll prove to you that Beit Shammai holds that a shtar omid likvot is the equivalent of gavuy. It's not. We're talking about over here a case where a husband is bringing his wife to the Beis HaMikdash to drink the Meis Sotah, and he dies before she gets a chance to drink the Mayim HaMa'orim. So the question is, does she still have a right to the ksuva? She cannot be given the Mayim HaMa'orim by anyone but her husband. As we're going to see, we saw this before, but as we'll review in a moment. And therefore, there's no way for it to be determined whether she actually had committed adultery or not, right? So what happens with the ksuva? Because a woman who commits adultery does not get her ksuva. So Beit Shammai says she gets that ksuva, and she does not have any ability, of course, lo shotot. There is no meis sotah. Beis Hillel says, what do you mean? If she doesn't drink, she doesn't get. No tiki, no lani. And therefore, either she proves that she did not sleep with this guy that she was alone with, or she's not going to collect. What? Beis Hillel can't mean she's got to drink. What do you mean, oshotot? There is no way. It says, beferish in the pasuk, veheviha ish et ishto el hakohen. Okay, the man is dead. He's going to have a very hard time bringing his wife to the kohen. And therefore, there is no way whatsoever for this woman to drink. So what is Beis Hillel trying to say? Well, either she's going to drink or she's not going to get a ksuva. Malika, we don't have a husband. No, well, obviously what Beis Hillel is saying is that since she cannot drink, she cannot get a ksuva. That's good for what he's saying. Mitoch shelo shotot, lo not lo ketuva. Whereas Beit Shammai What do you think Beit Shammai was saying? How could she possibly collect the ketuvah if she might be an adulteress? Can you explain that to me? Isn't it a sveika? Suffolk zanai, suffolk lo zanai. And what are you going to do? You're going to use a suffolk to take money away from the heirs of the husband? How can you do that? Therefore, I'm showing you the only explanation of such a thing is that kasavre Beit Shammai shtar ha'omed li gavot ki gavui dami. And she is considered to already be in possession of her ksuvah, and therefore we're only keeping it in that chazaka. She had her ksuvah, she keeps the ksuvah. That's all that we're saying. But wait a minute, excuse me, you yourself, you're just proving yourself wrong. The whole point over here was that the reason she collects the ksuvah is because it says in the ksuvah, quote, when you marry another guy, then you will take what is written in this document. And she didn't marry another guy. So how is she collecting? Unquote. And that was the entire basis. Valeka. So, Amravashi, it is. The Yavam is considered to be the equivalent of another man. So since her husband's death puts her in position of having Zika to the Yavam, we consider that to be the equivalent of Kishitina Silacher Titli, except that we're holding off on the collection because maybe the Yavam is going to be Miyabimer, and if he does, then the Ksuva is still going to remain pending until his death or until he divorces her, right? So, okay, but in reality, if he's going to walk away with the money of the ksuva because she drops dead before he has a chance to do anything about the yibum, so then he is still going to be taking that money from her. And therefore, Taina Zabaye, Rava should have to recognize that it does make sense to say that the din of the kvura would still be chal on the heirs. Now, as usual, when people show you that you're wrong, about 3 minutes later, after they leave the room, you say, oh, heck, why didn't I tell him? And that's exactly what happened over here. So Rava figured out what he should have said to Abaye, but it was too late. So he writes out or gives this message to Rav Shmaya Bar Zera. He wants him to go find Abaye and explain to him why what he said was wrong. Okay, here's what Abaye has to answer. Are you claiming seriously that the ksuvah is considered to be a shtar omed li gavot? Vatanya, Rabbi Abba Omer, I ask Sumchus, what do you do in the event that you are a yavam, your husband, your brother died, leaving a $500 million estate together with a $200 ksuva against the estate. And now you can't do anything with the $500 million and you're going absolutely bananas. So what can you do in order to free up that money? And you know what he said? He said to me, well, if you're a kohen, then you got a problem. But what you could do if you're a Kohen, you can't force her into it, but what you can do is you can con her into it. So what you do is you make her a big banquet of queen for the day. And she is like, you get her so high. She is like, wow, in seventh heaven. And then you say to her, listen, darling, wouldn't you like me to be able to invest all that great money that we've got? And she says, sure. And that's it. Okay. And that's about all you can do. If she keeps her head attached and she doesn't want to let you do it, there's no way you can force her into doing it because she's got a shibud. Now, look, obviously, let's just talk this out. In general, every woman has a shibud against everything her husband owns. Obviously, that doesn't mean he can't sell anything. He can sell anything that he wants, right? And then she can go out and she can take it away. If there's not going to be anything to support her claim of her ketuvah, she can go and take it away from whoever bought it. That's not a problem. So the question is, I mean, why then in this case is it any different? The fact is that the difference comes from a very simple reason. Normally, the language of the ketuvah is that any property that I own or that I will buy is going to be meshubah to you. Now, that gives her a sense of security. Over here, her husband is dead, so he ain't going to be buying anything for a long time. And therefore, all that she has to look to is the property that currently exists. So if she says she doesn't feel secure, we can't force her to accept as an alternative a new ksuva that this guy writes to her, in which he says, everything that I buy will be... She says, I don't want what you're going to buy. I want what my poor deceased husband left. And there's no way that you can force it. So you need her permission. But if you're not a Kohen, then since you're not busy holding up these glasses of water all day long, what you could do, if you're not a Kohen, is you could give her a divorce. So you say to her, oh, look, we're just going to go through a divorce over here for 2 minutes. I'm going to give you a divorce, and then I'm remarrying you on the spot. Okay, what happens then? So the moment you divorce her, okay, at that point, you give her a get, you pay her her ksuva, and then you remarry her. Now, once you do that, there's no problem, because at that moment, she is no longer has any more claims against properties because she already collected her ksuva. Now, here is my proof against you, Mr. Abaye, says Rava with the message that he sends. If you really believe that a ksuva of a Yavama could have been actually taken by her during the Yavam's life, right? Just like by a husband. Why can't he put down the money for the ksuva and let him sell the rest? Because if he puts it down and she has a right to actually collect it at that time, so then it would belong to her from that point. And therefore, it would be a real release, basically the payment of the ksuva. Now, I understand that normally you cannot do that to a wife because we don't allow you, if it's your ksuva, you can't pay off the ksuva in advance, because then you're going to be living with a woman that you are going to be easy to get rid of, right? But in this case, it's not your ksuva, it's her original husband's ksuva. And as far as the problem of, well, but you're not allowed to live with a woman that you could just casually get rid of, so write her a ksuva for 200 shekel. But you still get your $500 million because you've released it. Therefore, it's clear that the only thing to do is to divorce her. And that must mean that the ksuva is not collectible in the life of, in this case, the Yavam. Says Abaye, Rava, is this what you're going to ask me? You're going to ask me because of the fact that Reb Abba said in a Braisa, by the way, Reb Abba is actually Rav. And remember that Rav's name was Abba, or was known as Abba. And the reason that he can write a Braisa is because when he insisted on being a Tana, he was granted the status of a Tana. Remember, Rav Tana of a poet. So this, to distinguish his brises from his ma'amorim, it was always Tony Rebaba. That's just an interesting aside. Anyway, so Abaye says to Rava, listen here. Why didn't you ask me from the Mishnah? Come on, you're playing games with me. The Mishnah says, beferish, you cannot put the money down in the bank and tell her, harei ketuvatech munachat lech al ha-shulchan. Rather, kol nechasav achra'in lektuvata. Now, is that what it says in the Mishnah or not? Okay. So what in the heck are you asking me from some brisa or another when the Mishnah said beferish the fact that you cannot do that? Now, obviously, you knew why you couldn't ask me from this Mishnah. Yeah, says Rava, I can't ask you from the Mishnah because the Mishnah might just be telling the Yavam, a good idea, an Eitzah Tova. And if that case, now what the Eitzah Tova is, we're going to see in the end. We don't know it yet. In the end, the Eitzah Tova is going to be an Eitzah Tova not to destroy the viability of the relationship that he's trying to make now with the Yavama, because she will interpret this as his desire to get rid of her and making financial arrangements to get rid of her. But the truth is that at this point, Rashi learns, okay, so at this point we thought the Eitzah Tova would be that if anything happens to the cash that you put in the safety deposit box, you're going to have to write a ksuva, which Tosfos doesn't like, and he disproves it. And then the Tosfos himself says the Eitzah Tova is that this makes it a more viable marriage because it's not going to be so easy for him to get rid of her. Once the money has been set aside in a bank account or in a safe deposit box, it's basically he looks at it as being out of his hands. So if he gets angry at his wife, he says, "Will you go take your cash from the safe deposit box and get out of my life?" So that's Tosis's approach. The Rashba's approach is that we're talking about he's giving an Eitzah Tova to protect the wife, that it should be Kol Nechas of Achroim. Okay, but we'll see that ultimately we come out with Eitzah Tova as a reference to the fact that it's going to cause a tremendous amount of Eva. So I couldn't ask you from the Mishnah, because maybe that's all that it is. So it's very possible that it's merely Eitzah Tova Kamashma. And that's why the Elot, and it's got to be an Eitzah Tova. You see, I'm not just fooling around over here about it. If you read the rest of the Mishnah, you'll see that it's purely in terms of Eitzah Tova. Because how did you really understand the closing of the Mishnah? The closing of the Mishnah says you can't do that for your own wife. You can't tell your wife, here's the money for your ksuva. Tell me something. If you want to sell a piece of your property, can your wife stop you from selling a piece of your property by saying, hey, you can't do that. That's supposed to be set aside for my ksuva. Of course not. And if in the event that she's divorced after you sold that property, she'll have to go to court and take that property away from the buyers, right? I mean, so obviously it doesn't mean that. And what would you think? That it means you can't sell property that you own? Of course it doesn't mean that. So why is the Mishnah telling me it's an Eitzah Tova Kamashmalan? So therefore, the first part of the Mishnah was also Eitzah Tova Kamashmalan. Masha Ein Kein, Rabbi Abba. That is, that's a real problem, because for Rabbi Abba to say, I mean, consider this is really, it's all very nice to say, well, there's nothing to it. You give a divorce and then you get married. I mean, come on, man. You give a divorce and then you get remarried. That is so simple, right? I mean, people do this all the time. It's hell. I mean, it just involves so much garbage. Nobody wants to give a divorce and then go get married afterwards. So for Rabbi Abba to say, well, that's the only thing you can do. I mean, that is a serious, that's not an Eitzah Tova. I mean, that is a serious issue. He must be saying there is no alternative before going to such a drastic extreme to say that that's the only way you're going to do it. Says Abaya, no, it's not true. Because the problem over here, even I'll leave it to Rabbi Abba, is because it is going to cause more problems than the going through the divorce and remarriage. Because she is convinced, that's her narrative. All right, what's going on over here? He's setting aside money. The guy's obviously made a decision. He's going to get, that is going to cause, in the end, it'll cause a divorce, but it'll cause so much Ava on the way to the divorce, it just isn't worth it. So, I mean, I could say the same thing about Rav Abba. And therefore, it doesn't prove that the ksuva is not collectible mechaim. Now, there was an actual maisa where a guy, his brother died in Pumbedisa, and he had to go there to go marry his brother's wife. And there was actually a lot of money involved because the brother was quite rich. So there was a younger brother that was not going to be the one that was going to get to do the yibum. And that meant that he was going to be cut out of the inheritance of his brother, because the older brother was going to go and he was going to go and do Yibam, and then he's the only one that's going to inherit, right? Because that's what the Pasuk says. Habachor Asher Teled. So what did he came up with? A great idea. I'm going to throw her a get. Now, the Rabbanan say if one of the brothers throws the Yavama a get, then none of the brothers can take the woman B'Yibam. That was one of the Xeris, remember, that we had back in Masechet Yavama. So anyway, big brother finds out about this plan. And he runs to the younger brother and he says, wait a minute. What are you trying to screw this up for? Because you want money, right? I'll split the money with you. There's no problem. So my daitech, b'shum nichse, you think I'm going to keep all of the property for myself? No. Ana b'nichse b'ginalach, I am going to give you half of what I get. So you're not going to lose anything. There's no problem. Amar of Yosef, no good. Because kivan d'amar rabbanan lo lizabin, since the rabbanan says that the yavam is not able to sell any of that because the ksuva is mishabin all of that, therefore, even if he did go ahead and sell it, it wouldn't be a valid sale. And because of that, he cannot give it away to his brother either. So this share agreement is invalid. The Tanya, Misha made Viniach Shomeret Yavam, Viniach Bechasim B'Me'amana. A guy dies and he leaves a multi-million-dollar estate together with a 200 shekel ksuva that's owed against this million-dollar estate. Maybe she was an almana. Lo yimkar. He can't sell one penny of it. And therefore, this guy, the little brother, is out of his deal. Wait a second over here. Where do you get the idea that just because Rabbanan said not to do it, then if you do it, it's not a good sale? Excuse me? Then when we just had the Mishnah before, 3 days ago, we learned in the Mishnah that in the case of this woman, she's an Arusa. She went ahead and she got a big inheritance, right? So Beit Shammai says she's even allowed to sell. And even Beit Hillel says, no, she's not allowed to sell. But if she does sell, it's a good sale. So where'd you come up with the idea that just because the Rabbanan said Baruch Avram, just because the Rabbanan said, I just like to see those eyes looking up every once in a while. So just because the Rabbanan said she can't sell, so therefore if he does sell, so it's impossible to sell. It's not true. So anyway, since it turned out to be a big machlokas, so they went and sent this as a shaila to Reb Chanina Bar Papi. Was it a valid agreement or not to share the money of the estate of the brother of in Pumpadisa who died, or not, with the younger brother? So Reb Chanina Bar Papi sends back, Reb Yosef is 100% right. It's an invalid agreement. Omer Abayin. So Abayin says, well, now, I am so impressed with this psak of Reb Chanina Bar Papi. I mean, show me the beautiful earrings that he put on Reb Yosef. I mean, he must have given you some excellent reasoning, which, of course, he printed it up. Show me where he printed it up. You can't ask a shaila and the guy says to you, it's definitely like that. Well, it's definitely like that. Where's the logic? Who says that it's definitely like that? I'm not going to accept a psak like that. Show me the pretty earrings. I don't see any earrings. So they sent it as a shaila to Rabbi Yume Bereda Rav Nechumi, since Abaya wasn't interested in what the psak was from Chanina Bar Papi. So they sent it to Rabbi Numi Pereb Nechumi. And he sent back that the halacha actually is like a baye, that it is a valid agreement, because I don't see any argument against a bias point, that just because we said that you're not allowed to sell something doesn't mean that if it were sold, that it wouldn't be a kosher sale. However, look, if Rav Yosef comes up with some better argument, just let me know. I mean, I'm talking about the way the situation stands now, the way that Abaye is arguing with Rav Yosef. If Rav Yosef comes up with anything else, let me know. Right now, that's how I see it. So Rav Yosef went out to find another basis for his psak. Nofek Rav Yosef, Dokveshkach, sure enough, he went out and he found another proof. Tanya, Reishaya Nosheba Achiv. Here's a simple case. A guy lent money to a brother, and then what happened is that he dies and he leaves a wife who is now a Shomeret Yavam to that brother, the one who had borrowed the money. So you would think that the brother who is going to do the Yibam can say, look, I'm going to inherit all this guy's money anyway, my deceased brother. I'm certainly not going to pay him back a debt. I mean, I'm going to be taking everything he owns anyway. So you can't say that. Lo yomar ho'ov v'shani yoreish. Since I am going to be the heir, so I now am inheriting my own debt. So hechazakti, I'm not going to pay it back. No siree, he's got to pay it back. Elamotzi'in miyavam, we're going to take that amount of money out of the yavam's pocket. He's going to have to buy karka with it in order to ensure the ksuva of his yavama, and he can eat the tfua. That's fine. Who will help pay rot? So what do you see from here? Is that if he would sell anything, then it's obviously going to be boto, because that money was in his own hands. It hadn't been paid back yet, right? So the shibud belongs to the estate, but the money was in his hands now, milvas lo tzanit, no? And afal pikein, because of the shibud of the loan, we're going to take the money away from him. So we're going to take it away from him. So obviously that shibud is going to prevent selling something before I need to go take it back. I mean, is so clear. Huh? Says the buyer, well, I don't know. I mean, yeah, it does sort of sound like Rav Yosef, but you know what? Dilma de Tavale Abdullah. Maybe we were just giving him a good eitzah, you know, for your own good, you ought to actually buy some land, and that way you can ensure that you're not going to spend the money in Las Vegas. Says Rav Yosef, right. The Tana says, Motzi'in. We're going to take the money out of him, even if it means tying him up and pulling his wallet out of his back pocket. And you're telling me we're giving him a good eitzah, you know, don't go to Las Vegas. Well, it's absurd. You can't force a guy to pay money because you have a better idea than him and what he's supposed to use his money for. Of course, it doesn't mean that. Okay, so then they sent this new idea, obviously, because Rabbi Yumi Bered Rabbi Nachumi said, look, if he comes up with anything else, let me know. Well, Rabbi Yosef sure as heck did come up with something else, and they sent this new proof to exactly the man who had originally paskin against him, Rabbi Yumi Bered Rabbi Nachumi. Huh. So he said to them, it sounded good, boys, but it ain't any good. Why not? Because Rabbi Yosef Bar Ben Yumi quoted Rabbi Nachman as saying, that brisa stinks. You can't use it for anything. It's useless. Don't pay any attention to that brisa behind the curtain. What? Why? What's wrong with it? My taima. I mean, is what's wrong with it the fact that if you're talking about a loan, then you're talking about metaltalin? And metaltalim are not mishubet and ksuva? And because of that, you want to throw it out? I mean, according to Rabbi Meir, it certainly is. Maybe it was talking about Libet Rabbi Meir, and therefore by extrapolation, where we're talking about over here land, we're not talking about money, by extrapolation, so then it's a perfectly good brisa, right? Is it because you're saying, it makes no sense, because after all, the Yavam can say to the Yavama, excuse me, I borrowed money from my brother. I did not borrow money from you. And don't you come after me to pay back a loan that I owe my brother, who happens to be your husband, who is now deceased. Is that it? That in order to sue, you have to be the one who made the loan? But that's not true. Remember the famous Shibud of Reb Nosson. Gavi, remember the famous Shibud of Reb Nosson. Or in this case, we actually have Moshe here, who is not going on a beautiful walk, and he can remember Shibud HaDerev Nosson to write it down. even though you're not showing us anything, although your face is marvelous, but you started showing us the trees. So if you turn the phone around, we might still be able to see the trees. It could be it's too dark, I understand. So remember the famous Shibud? Yeah, beautiful. Shibud de Rav Nosson. The Shibud de Rav Nosson is Minayin in a case. Minayin no Shibach Habiro Mana. How do we know that if A owes B and B owes C, that C can go to A and collect, and A cannot say, I don't know who the heck you are? Minayin Shemotzin Mizevin Otin Zeh. Talmud Lomar V'natan La'asher Ashamlo. It says it's what kind of really weird way of saying La'asher Ashamlo, the one who is in ownership of the underlying principle? What's that point? The point is that if it was stolen from somebody who actually owed it to somebody else, so on, it's given back to the one who is ultimately owed that money. So that's not a good reason to say that this brisa stinks. It could be a perfectly good brisa. So what's the problem? You can't just come tell me arbitrarily you don't like the brisa. I'll tell you why. Somebody done made a big boo-boo. That's why. And I can trace the big boo-boo, okay? I'll tell you exactly what's happening over here. Somebody put together those two things. That, according to Rabbi Meir, you could collect from a Talmud and Shibud de Rav Nosson, right? So it added up in somebody's mind that this makes perfectly good sense, but it doesn't. Because you never find any Tana. Lo Ashkan Tana, the Machber Trei Chumri B'Ktuva. These dinim of the Ktuva, remember, are special takonas de Rabbanan. You can't just start clicking things together like it's a Lego set and say, well, according to Rabbi Meir, we can be machmer over here that you could collect it because it's metaltalik. Oh, but you don't owe him the money? Well, we could collect it then by adding Rabbi Nosson's Shibud to Rabbi Nosson. We don't do that on a debt that the Rabbanan create. I mean, that's taking for granted that the debt is an actuality. But you can't start putting together every chumrah that you find on something that's drabbanan, where we normally are not machmeran. And therefore, it's clear what happened over here. Someone knew the din of Rabbi Meir. Someone knew the din of Shibud de Rav Nosson and didn't realize that in this particular case, you can't put them together. And that means that some Talmud or another made a mistake. And this braita is not a good braita. It's been misquoted. Oh, my brother. Oh, my gosh. Im kein, now at last I understand. All the years that this, every time this brisa comes up, I hear a baya muttering, Zuena Mishnah. Bah, nonsense. Ah, absurd. I never could figure out, how does he know? And lo yadana mahi. Well, at least now I know.